today we're going to talk about the Bodhisattva and the Bodhisattva vow. This is a continuation of this exploration of the fundamental teachings.
Yeah.
First we talked about emptiness, and that emptiness does not mean absence, except it means absence of separation. Empty of separation, empty of isolation, empty of fixedness. And that this, the kind of flip side of this, is dependent co-arising, is this complete intimacy, complete interconnectedness of everything in the deepest possible way, that there's no place that you're going to find a fixed thing ever anywhere separate from everything else. So these two teachings go together. They're essentially two different ways of talking about the same thing. And this lack of separateness and isolation, this lack of isolation or separateness or permanence, includes everything, including ourselves. So even the self that we think we are, this fixed self that we think we are, is actually this dependently co-arisen event, always changing, never separate, nothing fixed or eternal, solid. Which doesn't mean that we don't have a self. We do have one. I'm me, you're you. We go about our days. We have identities, stories, narratives, all of that. But there is this other truth, which is called the teachings of no self, right? That there's no fixed eternal self. There's no separate self. There's no self. You can look and look and look and look and look, and you will not find a separate eternal self. What you will find is this rich, relational, interdependent event. And there is uniqueness to it, a unique arising of this particular one, in this particular place, at this particular time. So there is uniqueness, there is narrative, there is expressiveness, there is dynamic agency, there is all of this. And it's not fixed or eternal. Okay? So those are the fundamental things we've been talking about. And also, the language for this, that there's the language of emptiness, and then there's the language of Buddha nature. So Buddha nature, the words of Buddha nature sound like, can sound like, you will find something fixed and eternal, right? But though that language is a positive language, because we need that as human beings, we need to have positive language that endows us with possibility, that tells us something about who we are in the deepest way, tells us about who we can be moment by moment. And that's the language of Buddha nature. So Buddha nature, as Dogen says, is not something we possess. It's not some kernel that we'll find if we work hard enough. It is what we are. And what we are is this interdependent, vital reality. So all being is Buddha nature, as Dogen's teaching. This moment is the activity of Buddha. And this is deeply challenging to us, because we say, moi, you know. But that's the teaching. So we wonder then, how do we practice this truth every day? What does this mean for us? And next week I want to talk about specifically about the particulars of Soto Zen practice. But as a Mahayana teaching, as something that's based in a certain stream of teachings, that all of our practices go back to what's called the Bodhisattva vow. So the Bodhisattva is a being who's dedicated to enlightenment. Okay. The Bodhisattva way is the way of a being who's dedicated to enlightenment. So Bodhi means enlightenment, realization, and Sattva means being. Okay, so Bodhisattva, enlightenment being. Being who is dedicated to enlightenment, being who is lives their life in accord with the teachings, with the aspiration to wake up. So this aspiration to wake up, it's important to note, is the aspiration to wake up with and for all other beings, not just for myself. In fact, there is no Buddhist teaching that's just for yourself, because the teaching is it's we're all interdependent, right? So provisionally there might be a focus on yourself, but ultimately the realization of the teachings is a realization that expresses kindness, engagement, service. So the path of the Bodhisattva is a path of freedom and generosity and joyfulness and connection. There's two ways we can talk about the Bodhisattva. One way is an object of veneration. So if you look up here, you'll see this little white figure here, this female figure, the one that's sitting in front of the Buddha. That's Kanon Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva of mercy or compassion, Avalokiteshvara. Kuan Yin, you may have heard of Kuan Yin. You'll see her all over with vases pouring out mercy and compassion and kindness. Very, very venerated figure in China in particular, in Southeast Asia. You'll see one of my students where I taught had traveled. He was Chinese-American, and he traveled to China, and he brought back pictures of this enormously tall Kuan Yin. I mean, we're talking a couple of stories tall that people have been coming to for a long, long time, pouring out their sorrows, pouring out their tears, wanting to be heard. Kanon Bodhisattva is sometimes called she who hears the cries of the world, or he who bends down to listen. So there's this sense of a desire to alleviate suffering. And as human beings, we tend to want to identify these principles in some embodied form. So Kanon Bodhisattva, and this particular one was brought back by one of my brothers when he was in Vietnam. So we identify this principle of compassion or principle of wisdom, and we personify it, right? And we venerate it. So that's one way of talking about Bodhisattva. There's Bodhisattva of wisdom, Bodhisattva of compassion, Bodhisattva of shining practice, Fudo, there's lots of Bodhisattvas. He has a rope. Mm. And when you try and get away from the practice, he lasses you and pulls you. And he's covered with fire, it's a really fierce entity.
Cowboy.
Huh?
It's a cowboy.
Cowboy. So these bodhisattvas, this teaching is rooted in the emptiness teachings, rooted in the teachings of the perfection of wisdom. Rooted in this. So that's one way of thinking about a bodhisattva. The other way of thinking about the bodhisattva is us. When we follow the path of awakening, when we place that in the center of our lives, when we take the time to engage, when we, you know, when we take up this discipline, okay. Brother David Stendhal-Rouse, who's a wonderful Benedictine monk, taught us once that discipline is following what you love. It comes from the word disciple. So discipline does not mean beat yourself up. It means waking up. It means paying attention to what your priorities are. It means following the path out of love. So the vow, the Bodhisattva vow, is this. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless or endless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Okay, you want to hear that again? Mm-hmm. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are endless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. You think you can do that before breakfast? So there's various translations of this. Save is sometimes translated as liberate or free. So beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Other ways of saying this are I vow to awaken with them, which is more joining sense, or liberate them, liberate us all, that feeling. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. I vow to be free of them. Dharma gates. Dharma gates means every opportunity that you have to practice the Dharma, right? Which means, as I said the other week, when you're standing in line at the grocery store and the person in front of you has 18 items, what do? That's a Dharma gate. When you're at a Thanksgiving dinner, when your uncle is telling the same story for the 30th time, what do? When you're sitting in Zazen and your mind is wandering and you're agitated because your boss has called you in to talk to you, and you don't know what it's about, what do? You know, every moment is a Dharma gate. Every relationship, everything is a Dharma gate. So, Dharma gates are endless. I vow to enter them. I vow to take up every moment as an opportunity for awakening. And Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. I vow to transform my life, be transformed by the way, and become this, what I already am, right? Become what I already am. So, this is our vow. This vow of waking up in all possible ways. And, does that sound easy? Mm-hmm. Does it even sound possible? So one of the things that I like to think about is, this is kind of the Tales of Hercules, can be seen as the Tales of Hercules. And if we think of it ourselves in an ordinary way, it's impossible, right? Because all you would be doing is running around from one being to the next saying, can I help you? You all right? What can I do for you? You know, and there's more beings than you could even imagine, so that could get really distressing and depressing, right? Don't you think? Mm-hmm. So it's important that when we engage with this vow, we don't make it another way to be crushed or feel helpless or feel inadequate or, you know, we have to take it on and say, well, who is this I that can do this? It's not the way I usually think of myself, because I'm just one person and I'm not in Nigeria. And I'm not even on the other side of town. If I'm at the homeless shelter helping, what about the people bagging groceries, like, for Second Harvest? Like, this is sometimes distressing for people to think, well, what do I do? What do I do? How do I do? Nothing's enough. That's a pothole, that's an abyss that we can fall down in. It's also a challenge because it can get us to stop and say, the being that can save all beings in this moment is the being that knows her true nature, is the interdependent life. On the one hand, in the teachings of emptiness, there are no separate beings to save, right? Mm-hmm. There's nobody else out there. There's just this interdependent moment. This moment. We save this moment. When we engage with this moment, this standing in the grocery store line, this person that's in pain in front of us, we are engaging with all of reality because we are one with all of reality. So there's a kind of kindness to the path and a challenge. The challenge is know who you are. Know that you have to let go of your ordinary separation of yourself from all beings in order to even not get depressed by this vow. Does this make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really deep challenge. The challenge is not running around and saving all beings, somehow becoming a superhero, because you're not a superhero. None of us, well, maybe you are. Maybe you've got a secret. Maybe you're like Clark Kent or something. But as far as I know, everybody in this room is a human being. And human beings are limited. And part of the gift of the human being realm is the gift of humility. It's the gift of learning our place. Learning with gentleness and passion, we can express compassion in the world. But we are not alone in this. We are of this world and we give in each moment. That's how we express the Bodhisattva vow. And that teaches us something about who we are in the deepest possible way. It undoes our attachment to a sense of separate self. So the Bodhisattva vow is a place of refuge. It's a paradox. In the wisdom, in the great... The Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. It says, the Bodhisattva of great compassion takes hold of him or her. When we understand our interconnectedness, when we feel the intimacy with all life that is our true nature, our heart opens, right? This is this relationship between wisdom and compassion. Wisdom means to see clearly. Compassion means to be with. When we see clearly, when we see the truth of the teachings of emptiness, when we see the truth of dependent co-arising, we're not separate from that being that's bleeding and suffering in front of us. Our heart opens to them. And we can intelligently, with regard for ourselves as well, move to alleviate suffering. So, great compassion takes hold of them. So wisdom and compassion arise together, and there, and that dynamic is what we do in each moment. It's our Dharma gates, all the time, all the time. Wisdom and compassion, out of that dynamic, skillful means arises. So the practice kind of rests as a tripod, stable, right? Tripod's very stable. Wisdom, seeing clearly, compassion, being of and with, opening our hearts, and skillful means. And skillful means when we're awake and responsive to a situation, we have a much better chance of acting in a way that's going to be skillful, that's going to be helpful, that's going to be sensitive, that's going to be alive with the situation. Those three, wisdom, compassion, and skillful means, come together. So one of my favorite scholars, Heejee Kim, says, the essence of the Bodhisattva ideal is great compassion, Mahakaruna, or in Japanese, Daihi. It is essentially the reconciliation of the dualistic opposites of self and non-self. Reconciliation. Reconciliation. Reconcile, not in harmony. Self and non-self, sentient and insentient, Buddhas and sentient beings, and so forth. Dogen says, the way of the Bodhisattva is I am thusness and you are thusness. The identity of I and you in thusness is the fundamental metaphysical ground of great compassion. Remember we talked about thusness? The nose, it gets tweaked. That intimacy, that aliveness is thusness. I am that. You are that. When we remember that, we behave differently. We express ourselves differently. We come alive differently, right? It's so easy to separate. It's so easy to say, oh, you over there. You poor person who's acting out in aggression. I'm not going to look at all the causes and conditions that put you in that place. I'm going to blame you. Trungpa Rinpoche had this really great phrase, idiot compassion. Did I talk about this before? Idiot compassion?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. I really like this phrase because it challenges us to not be clueless in our compassion. It's not just kind of this, it's not sappy. Compassion is not sappy. It's not kind of, oh, I love the world. No. There's a precision to it, clarity to it. Includes our needs, includes our desires, includes our path, includes our responsibilities. It's all, like, there's real crystal clarity about it. So it's not thoughtless. So Kim goes on to say, the mystery of Avalokitesvaras, and all bodhisattvas for that matter, the truth is compassion in dynamic operation in the universe. Dogen says, working for the welfare of all beings means that you contrive ways to benefit all sentient beings, high and low. In other words, you carefully investigate others' distant and near futures and think of the various means which will be the most congenial to your well-being. Commiserate with the turtle in trouble and take care of a sparrow suffering from injury. When you see the distressed turtle or watch the sick sparrow, you do not expect repayment for your favor, but you are moved entirely by your desire to help others. Fools may think that if another's benefit is given priority, their own good must be lost. This is not the case. The practice of benefiting others is a total truth, ipo. Hence, it serves both self and others far and wide. Therefore, serve enemies and friends equally and assist self and others without discrimination. If you grasp this truth, you will see that this is the reason that even the grasses and trees, the wind and the water, are all naturally engaged in the activity of profiting others. And your understanding will certainly serve others' benefit. Okay, I want to read this last paragraph to you. Therefore, serve enemies and friends equally and assist self and others without discrimination. If you grasp this truth, you will see that this is the reason that even grass and trees and the wind and water are naturally engaged in the activity of profiting others. And your understanding will certainly serve others' benefit. We want to be awake to the ways that we create a world in which there is higher and lower, in which there are people that are worthy or beings that are worthy of our care and concern and those that aren't. We want, and that includes ourselves. So notice he says, assist self and others. He doesn't say, forget about yourself. He says, assist others and assist yourself without discrimination. This is really important because sometimes people think the bodhisattva means being a doormat. It doesn't. It means what Dogen Zenji calls the dignified activity of a Buddha. A dignified activity of a Buddha. Standing upright, having dignity, knowing your own worth, and knowing the worth of all other beings, sentient and insentient. That means not just human beings, it means dogs and trees and floors and roofs and cars and bowls. And this is really central to the Soto Zen way. All aspects of reality deserve our respect and care. So we don't pick up a spoon and drop it. We set it down. That is Buddha. That is us. We respond to the world in a respectful and engaged way. All moments are moments of teaching. Everything that comes towards us teaches us who we are. And our response is gratitude, right? Thank you. Oh, I have an opportunity to wake up. Oh, this cranky person in front of me. Oh, they're icky. I don't like them. Guess what? That's an opportunity to wake up. That's an opportunity to practice the dignified activity of a Buddha. They just gave you a chance. Right? It might not be welcome. We might not want it right now. I haven't had my coffee yet. But that's the way it is. So this is this, the reality of the Bodhisattva vow is not like I'm going to go save the world. That's great if you can do it. If you're Bill Gates and you've got billions of dollars, please give it away. But if you're in the realm that most of us are in, this takes place day by day when we get up. How do we treat our slippers when we get up in the morning? How much do we actually need in this world? How much do we need? Really? How can we live a life that has joy and kindness in it with other beings and serve ourselves and others? Set our priorities. That's the Bodhisattva way. It takes place all the time. And then it ripples out. Right? I've talked about this before. If you walk into a room where no one's looking at you, it feels bad, doesn't it? It doesn't take much to bring alive wisdom and compassion. It can mean saying hello. It can mean letting somebody go through who looks harassed with a 2-year-old and has 18 things in their card. That little place in our world is where the Bodhisattva vow takes place. And sometimes there are big things that happen. Sometimes we really need to reach out and do something that feels very major to us. But most of the time, it's small. And we can't guess what a kind word means to someone else. We can't know the impact of our actions. But we know, do we want to make choices to create more peace and kindness in this world, or do we want to contribute to aggression? You got a choice. Every moment you have a choice. Right? The Bodhisattva says, it's like a friend of mine used to say, this is mental heavy lifting. She said, it's like my mind is like this big, and I put it down over here. Sometimes it feels like that. You know, cranky, cranky, cranky. Kindness. Like, oh, but That's where we live, right? It's on the ground. This is where we live. So we serve enemies and friends equally and assist self and others without discrimination. If you grasp this truth, you will see that this is the reason that even grass and trees, the wind and water, are all naturally engaged in the activity of profiting others. Just if we return to our true self, which isn't an essence, remember. If we remember our interconnectedness, we will naturally give to others. Grasses and trees and wind and water are generously giving themselves to all beings every moment. This is a very Japanese way, Buddhist way of looking at things. Everything is alive and giving itself to us. Every breath we take is a gift, isn't it? It's the trees doing their job. It's, you know, there's no way we can even go one step without all beings supporting us. So, what do we do when we're gifted with all this stuff in every moment? If every moment you woke up and there was like, it was like Christmas, or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa, or your birthday, or whatever, and you were being gifted all the time, if that was your mind, what would that be like? That's the mind of a bodhisattva. The mind of a bodhisattva is aware of the intimacy and the gift that arises to us every moment. So the great philosopher and teacher, Shantideva, Indian, 8th century, wrote a wonderful book called The Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, which there's many commentaries. The Dalai Lama's done one, Pema Chodron's done one. This is the vow, he says. May I be a protector for those without one, a guide for travelers on the way. May I be a bridge, a boat, a ship for all those who wish to cross the water. May I be an island for those who seek one and a lamp for those desiring light. May I be a bed for those who wish to rest. Just like space and all the great elements such as earth that support life, for all the realms of the varied beings that reach unto the ends of space. For all those guest travelers traveling on the path of conditioned existence who wish to experience the bounties of happiness, this will satisfy them with joy and actually place them in supreme bliss. He does not say, when you get it all taken care of, you'll have supreme bliss. He says, if you practice the vow itself, that will be supreme bliss. Taking up the vow itself and living in that vow is the source of serenity and happiness, not someplace else further down the road when you've taken care of everything. This is very important. It's living this out in the conditions of our own life as they exist right now, not some special place with special clothes at a monastery, shaving your head, doing something else. You, in your life right now. This is the gateway. So it's not some hypothetical future after everybody is saved. It's right now. So in this way, one of the ways to think about this is... that we're not different from Avalokiteshvara. So, the Bodhisattva of compassion is not an object of faith, it's the subject of faith. It's the subject of practice. Right? We are that. We are not different from her. So this is the Bodhisattva path of awakening. And it guides us in all of our daily activities. It reminds us of who we are. So you might try this out. Saying the vow in the morning. Saying something simple like, I vow to wake up for the benefit of myself and all beings. I vow to be kind today for the benefit of... And then when you fail, as you inevitably will, one of the great things about having such a lofty vow is that you get to be very intimate with failure, because it's impossible. When you fail, you have compassion for yourself and all of beings who fail. There's no, it's like a hall of mirrors. You can never get away from compassion, right? So you attempt to be compassionate and you fail, then you're compassionate about that. And then you say, oh man, I'm just such a... And then you're compassionate about that. It's endless regress. There's no getting away from it. It's like, wait, stop! There's no getting away from it. So wrestling with this is a very, it's like, you know, you see these guys that wrestle women too, but they do this Greek wrestling. It's like, you know, I call it, Bodhisattva Way is mud wrestling. It's like you're in the mud with all other beings and you just, it strengthens you. This is, there was one other topic I wanted to talk about a little bit today, and I'll come back to it next week too, because it's a very important point for how we understand the details of our practice. And that is what faith is in Dogen's practice. As I think I said last week or the week before, I really agree with Stephen Batchelor's discussion of faith, which is faith is the confidence to follow the path of doubt to the end. So Dogen Zenji's way is a way of questioning, deep questioning, question, question, question. What is this? How? He says our family name is how, not why. How? How? How do I embody compassion in this moment? How do I wake up in this moment? That kind of curiosity and energy. That's the activity of faith. So the early Buddhist teachings talk about faith as one of the five spiritual faculties. And it's rooted in this deep questioning. There's no place for blind faith. It's not blind faith. It's not just simply accepting things. And Buddha was very clear about this. Don't just accept things because a teacher says so, or a text says so, or somebody else says so. Check it out. If that teaching bears fruit in greater awakeness and kindness and stability, do it. If it doesn't, don't do it. And this is really central. Because sometimes we can have misunderstandings of the teachings. In fact, inevitably we will have misunderstandings of the teachings. And one of the ways that we can tell if our understanding is correct or not is if our understanding leads to greater stability, kindness, joy, and awakeness, we're in the ballpark. If it leads to judgment, rigidity, fear, anxiety of a certain kind, aggression, we're probably off. Right? So that's a kind of, we can use that as a kind of testing ground for our understanding. Thich Nhat Hanh says, faith is the confidence we receive when we put into practice a teaching that helps us overcome difficulty. Which is life, right? Faith is the confidence we receive when we put into practice a teaching that helps us overcome difficulty. So it's like an organic thing. We grow in stability and confidence as we enact the teachings. And they actually bear fruit in our lives. So it's not blind faith. Sometimes faith is called a miraculous water clearing gem. So as we investigate the Bodhisattva vow, the Bodhisattva way, we grow in, and as we practice, as we take 10 minutes to sit in the morning, you know, we'll talk about the kind of details of practice, but take it on, see what happens. This is what the Buddha says, see what happens, and your confidence will grow, your understanding will grow, your faith will grow. So, Dogen says that we are all already fundamentally interconnected, luminous reality, right? Do you believe that? Do you know that? Do you have faith in that? What do you think? Any questions about that? Are you all completely comfortable with that?
No.
No?
Well, not
good.
I'm trying to absorb it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I don't know a single person that is seamlessly awake to that in every moment. No. We catch glimpses sometimes. It's usually when we let go of our self-concern. Mm-hmm. Not our self-respect, but our self... You know, we circle around this one over and over and over. We are not the center of the universe. Anybody tell you that? We need to hear that over and over again. So, the teaching is we are already the dynamic functioning of the entire universe. We are already Buddha right from the beginning. But we don't know that. We want to realize that, embody that in our daily lives. And that is the activity of, that's a clarification of faith. We say, I want to absorb that, right? I want to realize that. But Dogen says, it is imperative for those practicing the way to believe in it. Does that make sense? We have to test it out and see, does this make sense for me? If it doesn't, and what works for you is to go to the Presbyterian Church down the road, please go. The most important thing is that you live a life of dignity and service. Right? That's the most important thing. Buddhism is really it's kind of like, whatever. We have this teaching. We love it. We believe in it. We want to give it. But if it's not yours... If you want to tackle this path, if you want to infuse your life, you want to absorb it, it's imperative, he says, to believe in it, or to come to believe in it, or to test it out, question it, poke at it. Those who have faith in the way should know for certain that they are unfailingly in the way of the way from the very beginning. Believe in such a manner, penetrating the way thus, practice accordingly. So, Dogen Zenji's way is actually the practice of faith. Anyway, like, I say, your true nature is this vital, dynamic, interdependent reality, Buddha nature. And you say, really? Try it. The activity of trying it is faith, is questioning, is engaging. Yeah? So it requires us to release our habitual notions of this and that. And actually, for a moment, try something different. Be taught, be changed. So this is this taking on the Bodhisattva way, taking even listening for a moment to the Bodhisattva vow is putting in front of us a way of conceiving of and acting in the world that's really different than our usual way. Yeah, beings are numberless. I vow to awaken with them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. So it challenges us in a way to, in a daily way, to actually wake up to the teachings. And this is the activity of faith. This is a way of being that... it's Lin Shi calls Jishan. Confidence or trust. So Lin Shi says, we seek things outside ourselves to be peaceful because we don't trust ourselves. The Bodhisattva way is saying, remember who you are. You can trust that. And when you, as we let that saturate ourselves, we have a kind of confidence in our true nature. Not in our self-centered self, but something deeper than that, yeah? This is Jishen. Self. Ji is self. Shin is trust or confidence. Self-confidence. But it's not kind of, you know, I rule the world. I'm going to tell you, no. It's a very humble confidence in the dignity of Buddha in this moment. We, by interacting with the Bodhisattva way and being willing to speak our truth and saying, I don't know this. I don't ask questions. Don't hide. You know, don't pretend you know something you don't know, because none of us do. You see what I mean? There's an activity there of engagement that is very trustworthy. Questioning is very trustworthy. Suzuki Roshi said, beginner's mind, we should have beginner's mind. Beginner's mind says, it's an open mind, right? It's a mind of, what? It's asking really simple questions, really basic questions. He says, in the beginner's mind, there are many opportunities, in the expert's mind, there are few. So, expertise, on the one hand, means, you know, it's like the dear friend and Sangha member at a distance now who made this altar for us is an expert woodworker. So that's a certain kind of expertise, right? He's had many years of working with wood and lovingly handled wood, and you know. But he also has beginner's mind. So he looks at the wood and wants to know, what does this wood want? How is this situation going to happen? What can I do with this? Right? So it's not that we shut down our knowledge or our ability, but we open our minds up. That's beginner's mind. That's a trusting mind. That's the mind of confidence. It says, I'm willing to be open. I'm willing to start from fresh. I'm willing to engage with the Bodhisattva way without any expectation that I'm going to know, okay, I know how this is supposed to be. It's much more alive way to do it.